Good morning. Today's reading is taken from Decline of the English Murder by George Orwell. It is Sunday afternoon, preferably before the war. The wife is already asleep in the armchair, and the children have been sent out for a nice long walk. You put your feet up on the sofa, settle your spectacles on your nose, and open the News of the World. Roast beef in Yorkshire, or roast pork and applesauce, followed up by suet pudding and driven home, as it were, by a cup of mahogany brown tea, have put you in just the right mood. Your pipe is drawing sweetly, the sofa cushions are soft underneath you, the fire is well alight, the air is warm and stagnant. In these blissful circumstances, what is it that you want to read about? Naturally, about a murder. But what kind of murder? If one examines the murders which have given the greatest amount of pleasure to the British public, the murders whose story is known in its general outline to almost everyone, and which have been made into novels and rehashed over and over again by the Sunday papers, one finds a fairly strong family resemblance running through the greater number of them. Our great period in murder, our Elizabethan period, so to speak, seems to have been roughly 1850 and 1925, and the murderers whose reputations have largely stood the test of time are the following: Dr. Palmer of Rugeley, Jack the Ripper, Neil Cream, Mrs. Maybrick, Dr. Crippen, Seddon, Joseph Smith, Armstrong, and Bywaters and Thompson. In addition, in 1919 or thereabouts, there was another very celebrated case which fits into the general pattern, but which I'd better not mention by name, because the accused man was acquitted. Of the above-mentioned 9 cases, at least 4 have had successful novels based on them. One has been made into a popular melodrama, and the amount of literature surrounding them, in the form of newspaper write-ups, criminological treatises, and reminiscences by lawyers and police officers, would make a considerable library. It is difficult to believe that any recent English crime will be remembered so long and so intimately, and not only because the violence of external events has made murder seem unimportant, but because the prevalent type of crime seems to be changing. The principal cause célèbre of the war years was the so-called cleft chin murder, which has now been written up in a popular booklet. The verbatim account of the trial was published sometime last year by Messrs. Jarrolds, with an introduction by Mr. Beechover Roberts. Before returning to this pitiful and sordid case, which is only interesting from a sociological and perhaps a legal point of view, let me try to define what it is that the readers of Sunday papers mean when they say fretfully that you never seem to get a good murder nowadays. In considering the 9 murders I named above, one can start by excluding the Jack the Ripper case, which is in a class by itself. Of the other 8, 6 were poisoning cases, and 8 of the 10 criminals belonged to the middle class. In one way or another, sex was a powerful motive in all but 2 cases, and at least 4 cases, respectability, the desire to gain a secure position in life, or not to forfeit one's social position by some scandal such as divorce, was one of the main reasons for committing murder. In more than half the cases, the object was to get hold of a certain known sum of money, such as a legacy or an insurance policy. But the amount involved was nearly always small. In most of the cases, the crime only came to light slowly as the result of careful investigations which started off with the suspicions of neighbours or relatives, and in nearly every case there was some dramatic coincidence, in which the finger of Providence could be clearly seen, or one of those episodes that no novelist would dare to make up, such as Crippen's flight across the Atlantic with his mistress dressed as a boy, or Joseph Smith playing Nearer My God to Thee on the harmonium while one of his wives was drowning in the next room. The background of all these crimes, except Neil Cream's, was essentially domestic. Of 12 victims, 7 were either wife or husband of the murderer. With all this in mind, one can construct what would be, from a News of the World reader's point of view, the perfect murder. The murderer should be a little man of the professional class, a dentist or a solicitor, say, living an intensely respectable life somewhere in the suburbs, and preferably in a semi-detached house, which will allow the neighbours to hear suspicious sounds through the wall. He should be either chairman of the local Conservative Party branch, or a leading non-conformist and strong temperance advocate. He should go astray through cherishing a guilty passion for his secretary or the wife of a rival professional man, and should only bring himself to the point of murder after long and terrible wrestles with his conscience. Here ends the reading. Have a very good day.